first says shakal kufi migleime is chayav chatas from akum apatas. You take that kufi off the clothing. The mechaber following the Rambam translates that as locate yabolos shal gabi begadim. You take off some sort of like pilled threads from the clothing. Like when you weave wool, you have these little balls of pills of thread left on them. The Rashi says that kufi does not refer to sort of pills of thread, but rather to strings, or rather to like little pieces of straw or wood or something that get into the weaving. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah here, he says, sorry, let me just find the right page, in Sifkatan Beis, he says, Huadin, Kushin, Kisman, Dakar, Shneger, Begum, Lizum, Dinukia, Bolos, right? He says basically all the Pshatim are correct. Anything that when they weave is an unwanted item that's part of the clothing that you then remove, that's called Makimpachis. It could be a string, it could be a little piece of straw, or it could be a little pilled ball of string, whatever it may be. If you take it off your chayim for Makimpachis, the chiddush is that even though you're not making the garment, you're just taking off some extra unwanted piece, the chiddush is that's called Makimpachis. Taking off an extra unwanted piece is called Makimpachis. The Magen Avraham, if you have the the correct years of the Magen Avraham, which should be Ikapita Elihu, the Magen Avraham says, and it's quoted by the Mishnah Berurah, that likewise, if the tailor puts in these big stitches. The tailor makes these big stitches to hold it while he makes the small stitches, and he leaves those big stitches in. When you take those big stitches out, he is besupik, but he's choshish. That's also shasha maki v'patish. The lechora, his point is, even though it wasn't created in the weaving process, like all these other things. Gemara says, what's created in the weaving process of the basic cloth, and then you take out extra pieces that are unwanted, that's maki v'patish. Magen Avraham, he quotes from a Sefer that's now obscure, called Sefer HaZichronos, I think. Or is this part from Sefer HaZichronos? No. This part is from the Shilta Giborim, sorry. He quotes from the Shilta Giborim that even if it wasn't part of the weaving process, just part of the sewing process, the tailor put in big stitches to hold it while he did the fine stitching. And those big stitches were supposed to go in the garbage afterwards and he forgot to remove them. If you remove them, that's also a chashash. He's not sure, but we're machmir. That's also machmir patish because it's taking out the unwanted part that were left from the processing, from the creation of the garment, whether it's from the weaving or from the sewing, we are machmir. The Gemara says there, however, that's only if you're makpid. It's only makpid patish if you're makpid, not if you're not makpid. Now, what does it mean? sorry. What does it mean makpid? What does it mean not makpid? So this is a fundamental machlokes rishonim. The simple shot in the Taz says that makpid means you wouldn't wear it otherwise. You can't wear it like that. You wouldn't go outside like that. Right? Sometimes yeshiva bachurim don't fully appreciate this concept. But even if you're a yeshiva bachur, your mother would say to you, you can't go outside like that. So if you can't go outside like that, it's embarrassing to walk outside like that, you'd rather change your clothes, then that's called makbid. If you don't love it, but you walk outside like that, it's not a big deal, then that's not makbid. That's the pashut pshat of the Gemara. That's what the Taz really thinks. All the Rishonim agree to. In which case, if it's not a big deal, then it's not a malacha. However, the Rambam is more machmir. The Taz doesn't think so, but most people assume the Rambam is more machmir, and this is the Magen Avraham, and the Machaber, and the Mishnah Berurah. So what does machmid mean? Machmid versus not machmid. The word doesn't say the word not machmid. So, the Taz, and this is the simple shot, says machmid means you can't wear it. I don't mean physically can't, I mean socially can't. And Einamakud means you can wear it. You just prefer to take it off. However, the Pshat of the Rambam, and this is the Pshat of the Machaber and the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah, clearly the way we paskin, is that Makud means you want to remove it. You would wear it otherwise, but as long as you want to remove it, that's called Makud. So what's Eino Makud? If you don't want to remove, why are you removing it? So says the Mechaber, you're just playing around. You notice sometimes people just play around and they remove things from their clothing. I've seen a lot of people do this. When you play around, you remove things from your clothing. You don't really want to remove things from your clothing. You're just, it's not busying yourself. So this is just fidgeting, right? You're just, when you fidget sometimes, you find the extra things and you take them out of your clothing. But you don't really care to take them out. It's just a way of fidgeting. So that's obviously much more machmir. He's saying, even if it's not crucial, but you just prefer to remove it, that's still called machmir patish. It's still called finishing, like it's an unfinished garment, and it's still called finishing the garment that we paskin. Like the Pashim Shah and the Rambam, again, the reason I used to toss it, the Rambam didn't mean it. But we pass the Pashim Shah of the Rambam that even if it's just a preference, it's not crucial that you remove it, you just would prefer to remove it, that's an issue to Raisa Makav Patish. The only time it's not Makav Patish is if you're stopped fidgeting and you're taking things out of your clothing when you are fidgeting. And even in that case, the Magen Avraham quotes from the Sefer Zichronos that even this case, quotes the Magen Avraham, says the Magen Avraham, is still Aser Midrabanan. Meaning even the fidgeting is not mutter, it's just Aser Midrabanan. So if you see someone fidgeting and removing things from his clothing, you have to tell them to stop, because they're doing an Iser Midrabanan. If you catch yourself fidgeting, then you have to stop, hopefully before you start, and not do an Iser Midrabanan. So this is pretty chumra. Anytime you remove something extra from your clothing, that is an Iser Daraisa if you care at all, and even if you don't care, it's an Iser Midrabanan.
So how are we? I don't really understand what's happening. Are you doing X action, and then this is and then it's coming out, or are you taking them out, but just like absentmindedly?
No, you're taking them out absentmindedly. You never took things out absentmindedly.
It's not necessarily. Meaning you are.
Okay, so it's a great question. The simple pshat is, I know some of us had an argument about this earlier, and it's not clear in the Achronim. It's very funny when you say what the simple pshat is. Some things. Two opinions that run, and who gets to talk about the simple pshat is. So the answer is I do, because I'm standing here. I can't start with the right pshat is that. I can't figure out who you have a chlokas. But I think the simple pshat is that this is not talking about the classic category of misasik. Classic misasik means you don't even know what you're doing. Here it just means you're not machshavit, you're just fidgeting. It's not important to you. And that's why it would be asum darbanan, even though classic misasik might not be asum darbanan, ve en kamakum laharich.
We're referring to like removing the pills on us, like ovals.
Is the beginning of a makiv patish considered a makiv patish, or is makiv patish only the very last blow?
Right. All these examples that I think Mari brought up are like.
Right, let's say you take off the akufmi glimi, you have six akufi. Is it only makav patish take off the sixth? Or is it even makav patish take off one through five?
The beard halacha discusses.
Yeah, we did see something about this. Who did we see about this?
First beard halacha on the suit
base. Oh, there it is. Okay, thank you. Okay. That's exactly the discussion of the beard halacha here. And the prima gadim is... the prima gadim is mesupik about it, and then he tries to bring a raya, and lemaisa, he seems to come out lechumra. So that if something is a finishing act, even if you only do part of the finishing act, that could still be a problem. Now, the question is, does that mean it's also to take anything off your clothes, assuming you're a makbid? So the. If you look a little earlier, the Rama in Sif Aleph, at the end of Sif Aleph, right before this says, Avol mutar lahasar anotzos min abeged b'Shabbos. You're allowed to take feathers off your clothing on Shabbos. Right? So it's not usher to take anything. You're allowed to take feathers off your clothing on Shabbos. So I understand his main point is that it's not libun to take. Sifal really got libun. It's not considered laundering to take feathers off your clothing on Shabbos because the feathers aren't really stuck inside the clothing. They're just on the surface. Okay, but is it makim apati? Right? That's his main point. It's not malabing to take feathers off your clothing on Shabbos. Okay, this would be similar to, I think, the issue of dog hair. Is it malabing to take dog hair off your clothes on Shabbos? No, because the dog hair is not dirt that's in the fabric of your clothes. It's just something sitting on the surface. But forget about malabi. Is it, why isn't it makim apatish to take off these feathers? Right? Meaning, the Rambam says, oh, it's not malabi. And he doesn't even bother to explain why it's not makim apatish. Obviously, it's not makim apatish. Why is it not? Why is it not makim apatish? So, the Mishnah Brura in the Shaaret Zion, Sivkatan Tess, says it's not a problem of Tikkun Moneh. And he says, why not? And he says, don't think it's because the feathers are very lightly on the surface. He says, even taking thorns out of your clothing is not Tikkun Moneh, says the Shaaret Zion. Says even taking thorns out of your clothing is not a problem of tikkun maneh. Why isn't it a problem of tikkun maneh? So he says, let's see if I can find a good line where he expresses this. So first says, Dilanar lahafresh menar kotsim demutter tikkun ramam gamke. The Rambam admits that you're allowed to take off thorns, even though they stick in your clothing. So obviously, even something stuck inside your clothing is mutter to remove. So if the akufim iglimi, if all this stuff is asur, so why are the thorns and the feathers mutter? It's obviously not a problem of tikkun maneh. And he says, basically, the difference is whether it's malacha sha'umnim osin osa be'is gamro v'hi malacha chashuva v'chema mora lashon aram v'shkaf mazeh v'mo sha'umnim osim. The difference is it's part of a professional process of creating something. Then that is, if it's part of a professional process of creating something, then that's malacha. If it's not part of the professional process of creating something, then it is then it is no problem. What this seems to, the way this is understood by the poskim is that things that are part of the process of creating something, like, you know, sometimes when you create something and have something extra, you have to take it off. Whether that be an extra piece, whether that be an extra measurement, or whether that be impurities that get in during the process. That is part of the professional process of constructing something. However, if something just gets something on it afterwards, like in the course of regular use, something gets dirty, not just feathers, feathers are schmeasy, but even thorns that get inside, what's the difference between a thorn that gets inside and a stick that was woven inside? The answer is, one is part of the professional process of manufacturing, and one is just what someone does when they have clothing. If something gets on it, they take that thing off the clothing. So therefore, taking something off that comes onto the clothing when you're wearing it, that's not a shash of makim apatish. Makim apatish is only things that are part of the manufacturing process. Therefore, say almost all the poskim, I saw that in the Chut Shani quotes from Nissen Karelis who wants to be machmer on this, but he doesn't explain. It's like one of these short halachas. He doesn't explain the lundus. But all the other poskim say if you have a price tag that is, let's say, you know, a lot of price tags, they're like hooked on with that little plastic, attached with that little plastic string, you know, that has like a T on both ends that keeps the price tag on. So if they put the price tag on the garment, says that you're allowed to take off on Shabbos. Okay, many poskim are right. It's better just to avoid any chash of either that there might be a das yachidu asers or that it might look bad to people who don't understand, etc. It's always better to take off all the tags before Shabbos. I think everyone agrees it's better to just take off all the tags before Shabbos and not worry about it. But, I think, it can't hurt. It certainly can't hurt to take off all the tags before Shabbos, even if that's not an absolute obligation. But, really, the price tags, there's no problem taking them off on Shabbos, because the price tags are not like, it says here, the things that are left from the manufacturing process that you have to finish the work by taking off. No, the product's already finished. Then they put a price tag on. Taking off the price tag is not how you finish manufacturing the item. if it would have extra stitches in it for the manufacturing, that would be the finish making the item when you're taking out the extra stitches. But a price tag, it's a fully formed garment. They put the price tag on to tell you what the price is. So that's like thorns and that's like thorns that get stuck, thorns and thistles that get stuck in your clothing. And that is the Rosh Shlomo Zalman says the Shemir Shabbos Kol Chasa, and the Orach HaShabbos likewise says, pretty much all the modern day posts say that the price tags, at the very least for now, the ones that are stuck with that little plastic, you know what I mean, that little plastic string with a T on both ends. Those price tags are okay to take off on Shabbos. It's not a shasha makim patish because it's not finishing the manufacturing. It's post-manufacturing, so we'll put on the price tag to tell you the price. Now you can take off the price tag. That's not part of the process of manufacturing.
So then could we extend this to any thing which has, like I said, some sort of plastic wrapping, that is the way that they sell it? Meaning, if I buy a deck of cards, can I just open up the plastic because it's not finishing it? No. It's already...
I disagree with your question, not with your answer. Taking the plastic wrapping off a deck of cards shouldn't even be a question of Makom HaPatish. Why not? Why shouldn't taking the plastic wrapping off the deck of cards even be a Havamina Makom HaPatish?
It's not connected.
Because it's not connected to the cards. It's a separate item. The cards are inside it. You're not improving the cards by taking off the wrapper. The Havamina is only for taking something that's attached to something. Then you might say, now you've finish the work because you're taking off the extra part. Right? If you take off the extra, that's finishing the work of something. That makes sense. Right. So that's poshut, not a problem.
And none of this is a korea?
You want to know whether it's korea? Well, it's clearly not korea to do any of the things discussed here because you're not ripping things. You're just like taking something out. And that's why I used the example. I was careful. I used the example of that plastic thing. That with the T on both ends?
I'm not so clear on the material. That's what I'm saying. You keep saying.
No, you don't know what I mean. Like when you have
so
something
you're
with
not
a,
ripping anything
hold on. When you have something with a price tag dangling from it, like usually the price tags, they don't sew it on with stitches. They just put it on with a piece
but
of plastic.
You still have to rip that plastic.
That's not okay. Whatever in English is called ripping is not necessarily called korea in Hebrew. Korea means taking out stitches. That's not stitching.
So you're ripping this plastic?
Yes, you can. You can cut or rip this plastic thing. The poskim say that's not korea. That's not derech korea. Derech korea is something that's stitched. If you stitch on the price tag, we'll get to it. Right? But most price tags aren't stitched on. I think the price tags are never stitched on because they want to be able to put them and take them off easily. Sometimes the manufacturer's label on the side
like
of the stitch,
right.
Stitch. But that's not the price tag. Oh, sometimes it is. Sometimes you have a cardboard price tag stitched on. Let's leave the stitched on things for a few minutes, up to an hour. But at the very least, the non-stitched on that are just stuck with a piece of plastic, all posts can agree that that's, or Rav Nissim Karelis and Chutzani seems to answer it, but almost all posts can agree, mainstream shop is you're allowed to take off the price tags on Shabbos. That's not Makom HaPatish. Why? Because it's like the Shaar Tzion says with the thorns that get stuck. That it's post-manufacturing, it's not part of the manufacturing. And that makes a lot of sense. It's not like, oh, they didn't finish making it properly in the manufacturing because they forgot to take off the price tag. No, they made it fully, then they stuck on a price tag for selling. So that's not a problem, Makom HaPatish. I mean, it's not a problem, Makom HaPatish, to take something out extra unless it was part of the manufacturing.
If you have a thread on your suit, let's say, you have to be mechalik if it was at the tailor the week before, or you're just... It hasn't been manufactured or at the tailor for a long time. So if it was just at the tailor,
what do you mean you have a thread?
Like you, sometimes when you bring it to the tailor, they don't like they're just loose threads that got on through the tailoring process. They're not so clean.
So that sounds.
But it's the same process, the same.
Well, that sounds a little like the Magen Avraham, right? The Magen Avraham says in the Yishuv Gibborim, even if it wasn't there in the weaving process, it was there in the sewing process. Perhaps that could be a problem of Makom HaPatish. So if the tailor left a thread in it, then I think that would be a problem of Makom HaPatish. That's part of the manufacturing. The tailoring is part of the manufacturing.
I'm not even talking about it was left in it. Sometimes it just, they cut a thread and it gets just
sometimes a thread, like a piece of thread just lands on it. So I think that would not be a problem. That's not part of the manufacturing process. Part of the manufacturing process, that sometimes, like Magen Avraham says, the tailor puts in a thread temporarily and is supposed to take it out and that's part of the work. But if a thread just, the tailor shop has a lot of loose threads, a thread falls onto it, that's just an accident. I don't think that's a problem.
What about the thread that keeps the back of the suit together when you buy it? You know the flaps that are...
The thread that keeps the flaps together.
So that's not Maisa Umnan, because they leave it there for the customer to cut it out.
Yeah, why do they sew that? You know they throw the flaps together in the back of your suit?
Yeah.
Why do they do that?
Maybe the suit stays together better in the store.
Uh-huh. Okay, so we'll get to that soon. Great. We'll get to that soon. Good, we'll get to that soon.
The more Michalalos would be like a pocket.
What if the pockets are sewn together? What if the pockets are sewn together? So the...
I heard you're supposed to keep them shut.
We're not getting the sheets. We're not passing in fashion here. If you want some of the passing fashion, you for sure come to the wrong place. Paskin Halacha, I try to do the best I can, and hope for Siyata Shemaya. Paskin fashion, I don't even bother with the shtadlus, because I haven't done the preparatory shtadlus, and also I'm not sure why I would get Siyata Shemaya. So don't ask me to paskin fashion for you. Although, I have one Eitza Tova. I have one psak of fashion, a one-line psak of fashion for everyone, is that you should ask your wife, and she'll tell you what to wear. You can't go wrong, because... your wife knows fashion better than you do. And even if she doesn't, if she likes the way you're dressed, then you'll be happy, then everyone will live happily ever after.
We might have shock.
If she's right, she's right. And if she's wrong, she's right.
Just to clarify, the plastic tag is not from Korea?
We assume that the Arkas has a long sleeve. It's not called Korea because it's not the derech of sewing.
Is there a preference at all to use your hand, your mouth, or scissors? Are you allowed to use any of those things?
Yeah, I don't think it makes a difference. I don't think it makes a difference to your mouth, but obviously be a shinoi. But I don't think you need to do it with Shino. If it's mutter, you don't need to do it with Shino. Okay, bye. What else did I want to say? Just one other point is that the Mishnah Berurah in Sivkot and Yud quotes another Rambam. The Rambam says, if you shake off a new talis to get rid of the white stuff that gets stuck with it, like the professionals do, that is makiv patish. That is Makiv Patish, and that Sharat Zion test that I had on the cards that I mentioned says that's talking about if it's part of the manufacturing process. Sometimes part of the manufacturing process is, and not nowadays, but in their days, is that there's a certain amount of like white stuff that got on the black thing that you have to shake off. Whatever is part of the manufacturing process would be a chash of Makiv Patish. But says Mishnah Berurah, whatever's just some dirt is not a chash of Makiv Patish.
So a lint roller?
So a lint roller is not a chashah makiv patish because that's not the derech that manufacturers do. Right? So a lint roller is not a chashah makiv patish. Correct. Whether a lint roller is a chash of anything else is a great question. But I asked different W. Chum about this. And Ramon thought that a lint roller was also not a shash of any other malacha, but there are different opinions about this. Okay, so that's one thing I wanted to mention. Now let's get to the next, and we'll come back to this soon. But now let's go to the next sif in Submission Bays, which is about folding clothing. Right, so the Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch here quotes the Gemara pretty straightforwardly. The Gemara says, oh sure, you're allowed to fold clothing on Shabbos. If you fulfill a few conditions, which certainly in our modern day setting, you're never going to fulfill. It's going to be very rare that you're going to have all these conditions. Even in the old days, I think it would be only a small percent of the time that it would be mutter. But in what case? In mutter, mekaplikim l'chavs and tzorach Shabbos. Number one, you can only do it for tzorach Shabbos. Lavshim pomayom, to wear them on Shabbos. You can't do it to prepare for the weekday. V'davka v'adam echad, only if... What are the conditions? Number one, it has to be to wear that day. Okay, there's an interesting discussion here, Agav, in the Mishnah Berurah. And what if Yom Tov is Friday? Do you need an Erev Tavshilin for Shabbos? That's part of a broader discussion. Do you need an Erev Tavshilin to just stam prepare for Shabbos and Yom Tov or not? You know, to set the table, other things that are not cooking. And, you know, l'maisa, l'chachila, we would try to make an Erev Tavshilin in order to do anything on Yom Tov to prepare for Shabbos. But, back to Helcha Shabbos, number one, first condition is, l'tzorech Shabbos. Right? You can only fold them if you're going to wear them on Shabbos, not if you're going to wear them on Sunday or during the week. B'davka ba'adam echad, only one person. Because one person doesn't do such a professional job, two people do a more professional job. The Shavur says even one person folded on a table counts as two people. So it's pretty machmer. Then he continues, v'chadoshim shadayin lo niskab, so only new ones that weren't washed yet, u'levanim, and only if they are right, ve'ein lo lahachlif, and you don't have anything else to wear instead. V'yimchaser echmav alatzunayim, aser, and if you don't have any of these things, it's aser. So what do we say? Chadoshim, levanim, and five, which is really sort of a continuation of one, ein lo lahachlif, you don't have anything else to wear, or at least any other Shabbos clothes to wear. Now, obviously, these are all going to be very uncommon for us, because, first of all, it's only new white clothes, and we don't usually wear new white clothes, we usually wear old clothes, even though we were white on Shabbos. So even if we're one person, and even if it's a white clothing, first of all, our pants are usually not white, unless we're of a certain, hashkafa. The majority of people wear black pants on Shabbos and don't fold their shirts. But lu yitzur, even lu yitzur, you were one, did it by yourself without putting it on the table, and you had a new white shirt. Still, it's only mutter if you need it for Shabbos. You don't have anything else to wear for Shabbos, and usually we have like another set of clothes to wear for Shabbos. So basically, it's always usur to fold your clothing. Just agav, in terms of the logic of these factors, I understand the logic of number one and five. It's just they're only matter when necessary, they weren't matter when not necessary. I understand the logic of two. One person doesn't do such a good job, two people do a better job. What's the logic of three and four? So this is actually a bit of a machlokas. Rishonim, the Rama makes it sound like three and four are a matter of necessity. New white clothing really needs folding if you want to wear it on Shabbos so it'll look decent. Therefore, they're a matter because it's more necessary. As opposed to old clothing and black clothing, which is not so necessary. The Meiri, I think, says the opposite. He says, no, it's because white clothing and new clothing, it doesn't really accomplish so much. It doesn't improve it so much to fold it. But old clothing gets improved a lot by folding, and black clothing gets improved a lot by folding because it helps the colors stay or something, which I don't fully understand in our modern technology because we have better technology. Anyways, that's a bit of machlokas. Is it that three and four, the Rambam says, it's more important to sort of cover Shabbos? Or the Meiri says, no, three and four is to make it not accomplish so much because new white clothing does not accomplish so much, so it's not like work. Either way, you need all these five conditions. We never have all these five conditions, so it should be usser. The question is, so is it ever mutter to fold clothing on Shabbos? So, you need all five conditions, and we are very rarely going to have all five conditions. Even a talis. Usually a person folds a talis by himself, not on a table, and a lot of talisim are new, haven't been washed yet, and they're white, but usually you don't need it that Shabbos, because you only wear it once on Shabbos. So basically it's not going to come up. So are there any Yetirim? So the Mechaber quotes here, from the Mordechai, a heather from left field. And it's not just a Yesh Omer, but Nira Devara. Meaning, what does Yesh Omer mean? Yesh Omer means it's not in the Gemara, it's not in the Rambam, it's not in the Ruf, it's not in the Riff, it's not in the Rush. It's only in Mordechai, in a minority of sources. But even though no one else says it, he thinks everyone would agree. He thinks it makes sense. If it makes sense, then even if it's only found the minority Rishonim, we'd assume everyone else would agree. No one ever asked them that question. Or they didn't bother to write about it in their books. So, what did the Mordechai say? That's only to fold it on the pre-existing creases. But to fold it not on the pre-existing creases is mutter. The assumption of the Mordechai is that, is what's the malacha of folding? Right? The malacha of folding says the, give me a second. Okay, maybe he doesn't, Says the Mishabur and Yodalit, at least with regard to one scenario, Nereke metakin mana. It's a midrabanan metakin mana. It's like a makom patish drabanan. Meaning, what malach would it be? It's like a makom patish midrabanan. It's not chayiv midoraisa. You're not finishing the manufacturing. But midrabanan, they ask for folding clothing. So, however, says the Mordechai, that's only if you fold it in the regular folds, because that helps keep it, strengthen the shape of this clothing. But if you fold it not in the regular folds, even though it won't get wrinkled right now, that's not malacha. Just keeping it from getting wrinkled right now is not malacha. You're allowed to hang it on a hanger so it won't get wrinkled, right? The malacha is strengthening the tzura of the clothing. So, therefore, if you just fold it not in the folds, then it is no problem, says the Mishnah Berurah in Sifkat and Yotes, v'chein sas v'achronu l'dina, u'mikol makom isha rotu l'hachra l'atmo v'aday odif, says the Machzis HaShekel. So the Mishnah Berurah throws in a little bit of monkey wrench, says, even though all the achronim view this kula, still, if you want to be machmer, that's better. It's better to be machmer. And he's a very weak lashon here. He doesn't say bal nefesh yachmer, tov lahachmer, nachum lahachmer. He just is someone who wants to be machmer is even better. So it's a very weak suggestion, if you want to. But nonetheless, he does give that. He does give that suggestion. The Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa quotes from the Sefer Das Torah, the Maharsham, that likewise this hector the Mordechai would apply to something that doesn't have any creases. Like, for example, a knit sweater, for example. I don't know how many people wear sweaters nowadays. But, you know, like sweaters. They have no folds. They have no creases. Sweaters. You can't really put a fold in them because they're just the wool is too thin, or whatever it is, too thick, and it doesn't keep a crease. So you just fold it up stam, but it doesn't really make a crease. So it says, if you're Shabbos Kilchasa, that's the klal they have to the Mordechai. Whatever doesn't create a long-term crease is mutter, whether it's because you're folding it the wrong way, on the wrong parts, or because it's just not shayach to have folds in the first place. That is mutter. I think the minhag olam of most people is to be mekel like this. Even the Mishnah Berurah said that if you want to be machmir, there's room for the extra machmir. But especially given the the Aruch HaShulchan, I think one can definitely rely on this Mordechai, and if you don't have to want to be machmir. What are we with the Aruch HaShulchan? So the famous shita here. Let's say the kulas, right? Circumstances. Where folding is mutter. Circumstance where folding is mutter. So A is not on the creases. Right, if you fold it the wrong way, like sometimes if you want to fold your talus, what do? Instead of folding your talus the normal way, you fold it in thirds or something, not in the regular creases. And then that's, as the Mishnah Berurah, not going to have any kiyum that has no long-lasting effects, because if from now on you fold it that way, then it's a problem. But no, you're going to unfold it right away, keep it normally folded the normal way, and these creases are not going to have any effects. That's fine. Or something that just doesn't have creases. Yeah.
Just to make sure, would our taluses even apply to this because they're not chadashim?
Our taluses would be a problem. Because, well, whether an artalus is chadashim might depend how new it is. Artaluses might stay chadashim for a while.
Does chadashim mean that you just
have chadashim means you haven't washed them yet. Right? Isn't that what the Mishnah Berurah says chadashim means?
Does he say this here?
Yeah,
there it is. The Shulchan Aruch says. Sorry, that's what I meant. We just read it. Shadayim lonis kapsu. So a lot of artaluses haven't been washed yet. It depends. Eventually send it to the dry cleaners when it turns yellow and starts to smell. So a lot of our taluses might be new, they're white, they're other echad, but still, we usually don't need to wear them later that day. So, v'asr. So what's the heter of a talus? The answer is, the Mordechai gives you a heter of the talus if you fold it weird.
If you fold like backward on the crepe,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Because when you fold it backwards on the crease, it's still machazik the crease. So I'm not sure.
Once you're folding it on the creases, can you use a table and use a second person?
I think Pashtus, yes. I mean, not that we usually do that with polysynth.
Nice.
What?
Some people use the tables.
Oh, yeah? Okay, great. Now, the Kolbo is quoted as having a big kula. The Kolbo, the Rishon, has a big kula. He says all of this folding was only referring to the folding used through time, but he had a basic problem. How come everyone folds their talis in shul on Shabbos? Even nowadays. I mean, it may depend what shul you go to. Well, a lot of the shuls that I've been to in my life, when I was growing up in shul, everyone folded their talis on Shabbos. Why? And they all folded it on the regular creases on Shabbos. So why? So the Kolbo says, because the folding they refer to in the Gemara was a different kind of folding than we do nowadays. He starts the following question. Is folding really like Makom HaPatish? Like, give me a break, he says. Intuitively, this isn't like really fixing anything, right? What's the big deal of folding? So he says, no, they're referring to a different kind of folding. He says, their folding didn't mean you fold something so it won't get wrinkled when you put it in the closet. That's mutter. That's just putting something away. That's just called, when after you play, you have to put your toys away nicely for next time. That's not malacha. Their folding meant that some of their clothing had fancy designs. Like, you ever see, again, I don't mean to be awry historically from things they were 100, 200 years ago to things in the time of the Gemara. I'm just using an example. You know, sometimes these, like, movies from, like, 200 years ago, the girls have these dresses that, forget about girls, even the boys wore, like, some frilly stuff in those days. Right? They have these, like, frilly sleeves that are, like, folded and a whole pattern. You ever see, like, in the old days, like, George Washington-type people, when they had the frilly hair and they had the frilly clothing? Like, sometimes they had this frilly clothing and they had these puff sleeves which were folded like this and like this. And the design was that it had a certain folded design. Even nowadays, you know, there are some, you know, not so common with men's clothing. Like, I don't know, sometimes you have a little pleats here, but they're very small. But with women's clothing sometimes, and again, the men used to wear frillier clothing. You have this pleated skirt, right? There's such thing as a pleated skirt, I think. I think I've heard women in my household mention that word. I don't know if it's something. Sneeze to wear, not sneeze. I don't know if they said they were wearing it or not. I don't know. But let's assume there's something you can wear that's pleated, and you have pleated sleeves. So really, you understand, part of the asiya, part of the work making these things is pressing the folds into place, because it has to have a tsura of folds that gives the garment its finished tsura. So you could see saying how, as you wear the clothing, those folds might come out, and then it won't lie right, and it won't look proper, and it'll just look stupid, and it won't be a finished garment anymore. So, midrabanan, every time you fold that back, right, when you take it off, you might fold all the folds neatly in place and press down on them to help it keep its shape. Midrabanan, that you could see that as part of the way of fixing or finishing the manufacturing of your product, even though midaraisa, but you can understand at least midrabanan how that can be a malacha. That's what the Kolbo says. And there's a certain logic to it. It's not the mainstream psak, but you see where he's coming from. Just folding something so you put it away neatly, how is that like making something? But pressing down the pleats into place, I understand. That's like giving something its tsura. That's like making origami. If your origami comes out a little, you put it back, you could see how you could call that manufacturing something. And therefore he says, since nowadays, in his days, we don't wear much of that clothing. I've never worn anything with pleats that you have to fold down to keep the tzura. The only reason I fold my clothing is so I can put it away and it won't get wrinkled. Not to give it a special tzura, just to put it away neatly. Therefore, he says the cloth folding that we do, certainly with our talisim, is not a malacha at all. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, how come nowadays everyone in shul folds their talis? Okay, since we are this is a modern Orthodox yeshiva, we're allowed to admit that in Europe, not everyone was always machmir on everything. And it was pretty much the same as it is nowadays. And the Aruch HaShulchan says in the Shulchan Aruch, and all the posts, you're not allowed to fold your talis, but everyone does. Why? So the Mishnah Berurah says, why does everyone fold their talis? Yud Gimel, thank you. Oh, also the Kabbalah talis. It's Usser. Okay. unless you need to wear it at mincha. So he says, Taka, it's Usser. The Aruch HaShulchan says, everyone does it, they must have what to rely on, and therefore they're relying on the Kolbo, and you can rely on the kalbo halach lemaisa. So he says the kalbo that our folding is not what the Gemara meant. It's a chiddush because that's not the way it sounds from all the Rishonim Acharonim, but it makes sense logically. Lemaisa, the Aruch HaShulchan, justifies what we do based on the kalbo. A nice pshara l'anias daiti is what Ravadia says in the Shut Yichavidas. I'll tell you where it is in the Yichavidas Chelek Beis Simen Mem. Says Yesh Lahachmir, but Mekilin Yesh Lahem Al Mi Lismo. He says that really, if you're reading his Shut and you're trying to learn the halacha, you should not fold your talis on Shabbos, or should fold your talis not on the krisis. However, the Hamunam, who rely on the Kalbo, wants to be so much fun, and you don't have to correct people or yell at people. And I think that's the minhag of all the rabbis I've seen, all the shuls I grew up in. The rabbi didn't yell at the congregants or criticize the congregants for folding their talis, but he didn't fold his talis on Shabbos. If someone went and asked the rabbi what to do, you'd say the preferable practice is not to fold your talis on Shabbos, but everyone who does it, they're not Mechalli Shabbos, they have a shita to rely on. And I think that's the proper psak, so you shouldn't do it, but it doesn't have to bother you if other people do, because they have what to rely on.
Aside from the Mishnah Berurah.
Oh, sorry, let me just throw one point. That's why, even personally, I would say, if you fold it not on the creases, you don't feel bad for not doing the Imrutz Lahachra in the Mishnah Berurah, because really some people say it's much even on the creases. So to fold not on the creases, I think you can feel comfortable being Mako, even without this, but certainly. Okay, Zev.
So in Yud Gimel, he said it's also to fold your talis, but other places, if you like in the Mishnah Berurah, it seems to be like when he's speaking about Chadashim and Levanim, he seems to be mechalik between like when the folding really fixes it and when it just like a smaller, like it gets rid of the creases. So like even in those creases itself, it sounds like in a place where like it wouldn't really be such a big tikkun and it would be allowed.
Yes, except that he thinks that stam folding things nicely is a big tikkun, which is what the kalbo found to be doing.
Could it be that, even if you don't say that, back then it was because they're frilly clothing?
No, but look what he says. He says the reason it's such a tikkun is because it helps keep it smooth, etc. Our folding also helps keep it smooth. Like, he says it keeps it getting wrinkled. No, what does he say in...
Like in Tetzvot, he speaks about
that... So what did he say? If it's new, it's not going to wrinkle anyway, so it's not a tikkun. Make the deal. But if it's old... then, without folding, it would wrinkle, and keeping it from getting wrinkled is a big tikkun.
But maybe everything nowadays, because our clothing is manufactured well, everything would fit into that.
Okay, that's a speculation. But he looks at our clothing gets very wrinkled if you don't fold it. So I'm not.
Like our talis does, but our pants. If you don't hang your pants up on a,
then they get wrinkles, no?
You don't fold them and you don't hang them up. You're really cool.
Yeah, I think so. Okay.
You crush them like in the bottom of your closet and like leave them there.
Anyway, I hear the taina, but it's a speculation.
So what do we say about putting pants on a hanger?
So what do you say about pants? So just excuse me. Says Shmishav Skol Chasa. He says you can't fold your pants and put them on a hanger because you're not allowed to fold. He says, but if you just hang them on the hanger and they fall on their fold automatically, then he thinks that is okay. Meaning, to do it shalobi adayim is okay, I'll read you his lashon, he says. Where was this? Perek tetzvav halacha mem ches lo yikapel mechmasav havol mutar letloto tam bevav. You can hang them on a hook v'mehem et kaplan v'elehem letlanva, and if they fold themselves, then it is not a problem.
Does everybody understand that it is so self-folding?
So the only thing I think of, someone really wants to hang up their pants very neatly. Let's say you put them on a skirt hanger, You know what a skirt hanger is?
Yeah.
It's a hanger that has like two like clips on the bottom. And that's how do women hang up their skirt, right? There's no way to hang it, so they just clip it with these two clips, you know, like clothespin type of clips topologically, and it hangs. So if you want to do that to your pants, let's say you just clip your pants, and then the pants happen to lay nicely in the folds. So I think that the shmir shav, I don't know if that's what he meant, but I think that's what he would be matter. But because you're not actually folding on the folds, you're just hanging it, and it naturally falls into the folds. So I think that he'd be matter. So if you really want to hang up your pants, you know, you could hang up your pants. You don't have to scrunch them into a ball. You could just hang them on a hook. Although I don't see my pants folding the way he talks about if I hang it on the hook. But if you want to be more makpid on your pants, but we shouldn't rely on the kolbo. If people do, but we shouldn't rely on the kolbo. So then you could lay a clip into a skirt hanger, and then let them fall on their own, and that should be okay. Maybe that's what.
Or you could wear white pants.
But only if you don't have another pair, right? Because it's only in
Molahachle. I'm still trying to understand the Svara. Are we saying that every single time that you're doing something to prevent damage, that that's considered a tikkun?
It's an excellent question. What is the tikkun of folding is a great question. Meaning, what is the tikkun of folding? So, the Kolbo says only if you're making the pleats. Then it makes a lot of sense. That's a tikkun. We don't know like the Tkolbo, so what's the big tikkun of folding? So the Mishnah Berurah seems to say it keeps it from getting wrinkled, which is very difficult. Like, why is it a takin mana to keep it from getting wrinkled? The Meiri says it helps keep the quality of, it helps improve the quality of the clothing, helps improve the color of the clothing, that's why I said the color, which is also a little hard for us to understand. So I admit that it's a bit of a mystery. That's why I said I like the Kolbo Mishnah. I'm not saying I rely on the Kolbo because just, you know, there's a way to precedent in the Masoras Apsak, but I like the Kolbo Svara because what's the big tikkun of folding something? Right? So I don't know. Meaning, if it's not the Kolbo, what is the tikkun? Again, I'll just repeat the two things that I saw. The Meiri says it improves the color, and that's why it has to do with what color it is, which is, I'm not exactly sure if that has anything to do with Arbitzias. The Mishnah Berurah sounds like, it keeps it from getting wrinkled. Which is a very funny kind of makapatish, to keep something getting wrinkled is very funny. So I admit, it's a bit of a tzarchiyah, what the big tikkun is of folding something. If you don't hold like the kolbo, what's the big tikkun? You fold the talus, that's really a big tikkun for the talus? So most people assume like it's mechazik the folds. Is mechazik the folds such a big tikkun? The answer is I'm not sure, but...
More of an issue to unfold. Zebul. I would have thought that it would be more of an issue to unfold things, because that's what is makapatish. You're enabling it.
No, because you're not improving it. And you're not improving it for the long run. Yeah.
When we said we can put pants over a hanger, we're not saying that you can match up the pants, right?
No. When you put pants on a skirt hanger, you don't touch the folds at all. You would just clip the waist.
No, when the shirt shop was talking.
No, he didn't mean you could put it on the hanger like we normally do. That's folding.
He said you could put it in it and it folds malayan, no?
Yeah, the way we put on the hanger, we fold it biyadayim. Same as a talus. How do you do a talus? You take the ends, you fold, you let it hang down. So that's not what he meant. Besides, that's not what he meant. I don't know what he meant, but I assume he did not mean you could put our pants on a hanger like you normally do. Because
maybe he just meant that you can do it.
Maybe he just meant because you're not smoothing out the folds the whole way.
And it's not on a creases if you're not careful to get
them.
What about a shirt? Is that preserving it from wrinkling?
Right, so that's why it seems to be that the malacha, again, even if you hold not like the kolbo, the malacha is you're strengthening the creases. That also comes out of the Mishnah Berurah in Sivkatan. Yodchesh, ein lekibos ashum kiyo ve'inkam atakin klav. It's only a tikkun if you strengthen the creases. In a shirt, you're not strengthening the creases, so that is...
So a shirt you can put on the hanger.
A shirt you can put on the hanger because you're not folding it, right? You're not folding it at all.
Correct, but you are preventing it.
Right, so that clearly just preventing it. Okay, let me be clear.
So
just preventing it getting wrinkled is clearly not makapatish, only if you strengthen the fold.
So you're being mechazik the collar or the shoulder to fold.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You're not folding it. The Orcha Shavas just said. Oh, okay, sorry. The. Ah, okay. So, the Aruch HaShabbos asked this question on the Shmir Shabbos. Are you allowed to just put your pants on a hanger the normal way? Or is that called folding? And he says, sorry, he's not sure what he meant. I always assumed he didn't mean that, but the Aruch HaShabbos is Mesupik. Some people rule whenever the Aruch HaShabbos is Mesupik, it's Mutter. All right, I don't know, I still, seems to me that that's called folding. I admit, I'm not 100% sure what he means. If you look, anyone wants to look, the Aruch HaShabbos, Perek 13, footnote Kuf Lamed Hey, says, Tzarech Iyun, whether the Shmir Shabbos meant to be matir, hanging up pants the normal way or not. I don't know. I always thought that he did not mean to be matir that, but it's hard to say for sure. Okay, so much for folding. One of the interesting things the Shmir Shabbos says, and this is, it's a funny psak, I admit, we mentioned this already in another context, in Perek Tesvav, if Nun, Perek Tesvav Halacha Nun, he says, let's say I have a shirt. What if my collar comes unfolded? Can I fold the collar back?
It's like the Kolbo.
What?
That's the case of the Kolbo.
So, you'd think, according to the Kolbo, that should be like the worst case, right? Says the Shmir Shabbos Kolchasa, he says that that's mutter. Mutter, lachzir, the tavaron, shalayiv, the kibbutz, the masayim, or my cuff comes on. Can I, you know, sometimes my cuff comes down, can I fold the cuff back up? He actually says that is, mutter, and he quotes from Shlomo Zalman that that's just considered wearing it, not working on it. When you put it away and you fold it, that's working on it. When you're just you're wearing it and you turn it the normal way so you can wear it, that's not considered malacha. That is, you're right, according to the Kolbo. I never thought about it that way. According to the Kolbo, maybe you should say Adarava. But nonetheless, the minig is to be makel like this with Shlomo Zalman, that if someone's, I mean, it's not uncommon on Shabbos, if this happens to your collar, you can fold it back. And since that's just part of the normal way of wearing it, we don't consider that to be malacha like. Okay, the now while we're on so much for folding clothing, now I want to skip a little to Simen Shin Yud Zayin. Simen Shin Yud Zayin is you see over there, and Simen Shin Beis was sort of in the middle of halachos of laundry of malamim. Here, it's in the middle of halachos of kosher and matir. Shin Yud Zayin is mostly about kosher and matir. But we'll have to see if this is closely connected or not closely connected. We assume this, there is some close connection here. Agav, kosher and matir, he discusses a few things about makir b'patish. So, in Beis he says, Nishmatu lo ritzuas minol v'sandal. If the straps come out of your shur sandal, oshenishvat rov haregel, okay, it's the chronim try to figure out exactly what this means. The Taz has a funny misunderstanding of the Rambam that gives that causes them to have a whole discussion here, which we're not going to go into. The simple shot is either the straps come out, or not only do the straps come out, but because of that, most of the shoe comes undone. Motor lahatzer ritzuos. Either way, even if most of the shoe comes undone because those straps come out, you're allowed to put the straps back in their place, meaning you can put the laces or straps back in the shoe, v'achlo yikshar, as long as you don't tie it. Okay, that's what it's doing here in tying, meaning you can put the straps back into something as long as you don't tie it. Now, how do we know you're allowed to put the straps back into something? So, Tosa says, and Daf Mem Ches, based on the Gemara there, the Gemara talks about the Idra Beisadya. If the stuffing comes out of a pillow, right, nowadays sometimes have quilts or something, right, down jacket, but let's say the stuffing comes out of a pillow. You have a hole in your pillow, the stuffing comes out. So, the Gemara says you can put the stuffing back in the pillow. So Tosfos says, just like you can put the stuffing back in the pillow, you can put the laces back in the you can put the laces back in the shoes. Now, there are two possible issues here. The issue discussed explicitly in the Mechaber and the Ramah is, what about a gezeira atu kosher? After all, why aren't we afraid that if you put these straps or laces back in your clothing, you will come to tie them? I don't mean tie your shoes. Tying your shoes is mutter on Shabbos, right? Because that's a temporary knot. I mean, like, tie them into place with a professional strong knot, like, not modern-day shoelaces. In modern-day shoelaces, we never tie them with a permanent knot. But imagine you had, imagine you had a different kind of shoes, where maybe, like, instead of having one lace, which goes, like, in and out, maybe you had two separate laces, and each one was, like, tied into the shoe at the bottom, and then you laced it up and tied it to each other. So that bottom place where you tie it would be a permanent knot. Or what sometimes people have nowadays is, let's say you have sweatpants, right? Or a bathing suit, right? With like a drawstring in there. So what a lot of them have is, this drawstring comes out of a certain hole. But what if it gets sucked into that hole and then you can't reach it anymore and then it's under your pants? So what you do is, you tie a double or triple knot right when it comes out of that hole, just to keep it from slipping back into the hole so it'll be useful. Separate from every time you put it on. So sometimes when you put strings into shoes or clothing, again, in our shoes, I've never seen a permanent knot in our shoes. But I've seen in some kinds of clothing, you might put a permanent knot. What if you have something you tie and you attach to the permanent knot? So do we say this is a gzeira, lest you might tie a permanent knot? So, says the Mechaber, as long as you don't tie it, it is okay. But why? So here we have machlokes between everyone and the Ramah. Says the Ramah, b'davka sheyochel achzira below Torah. This is according to the parentheses printed here, right? The Biro Lach tells us something interesting about the parentheses. First, let's read the Ramah naively. B'davka sheyochel achzira below Torah. That's only if it's not a tircha to put it in. Avolim tzorech torach lezad, but if it's a tircha to put it in, usher. Meaning only if you can easily replace the string. But if it's hard, if it's hard work to replace it, then it's usher. Why? The chashina shavin yikshar, because it might lead to tying. So the says the Ramah, and if the French say Tosfos and Rush, her bapa metonin. Is that what it says? Yeah. Bachman says, if you put it in easily, we're not afraid you'll tie it permanently. Again, nothing to do with our tying shoes. It means permanently tying. But if it's hard work, then we're afraid you might tie it. Says the Magen Avraham, and the Taz and everyone, the Ramah misunderstood Tosfos and the Rush. That's not what Tosfos says. You open up the Tosfos, that's for sure not what he says. Tosfos says there's two separate factors. Says Tosfos, if it's something that you normally tie, it's usher to do because you might come to tie it. And says Tosfos, even if it's not something you normally tie, if it's hard work, it's usher to do because of the tircha. Doesn't say precisely what the problem is. Is it just the omnisher of tircha, or that the tircha makes it considered to be real fixing, is not so clear. But, one second, let me just put on the board what Tosfos on Daf Mem Pesam and Aleph and the Rush say. So according to the actual Tosfos and the Rush, and the Magen Avraham, and the Taz, and all the Poskim, says two separate Isurim. What are the two separate Isurim? One, Davar Shedarko Likshar, like says the Mishnah Berurah, he says the Mechaber's time they didn't tie the strings permanently onto their shoes. But in his days they did, although in our days they don't again. Davar Shedarko Likshar is always Aser. Aser Gzeira Shema Yikshar. We'll see now what means of this. Number two, in Yesh Torah Lehachniso, Aser Afilu Im Ein Darko Likshar. If it's hard to stick it in, like You know how, like, most of our, like, our shoes, it's easy to put the laces in. Why? Because they make, like, holes for the laces to fit through, right? They make it so that you can fit through the laces easily. But you can imagine, let's say something didn't have a proper hole, the right size for the laces. You have to, like, squeeze it in. It was really hard. Then it's usher, even if you're not going to tie it, just because of the tircha of... putting it in. So we paskin, there's two cases of it's usher putting shoelaces or other kind of drawstrings or other strings, right? What do you have? Sweatshirts also. Hoodies, that's what you call them?
Yeah.
Right? They have drawstrings in the hood. And sweatpants or bathing suits have also a string or shoelaces. Two separate cases where it's usher. Number one, it's usher wherever you might tie it. Number two, it's usher wherever it's a tircha. Therefore, I think our shoelaces, if your shoelaces come out, your shoelaces fall out, it's mutter to put them back on Shabbos. Because we never tie our shoelaces permanently. Like, we never tie our shoelaces in a way that's usher. We only tie our shoelaces in a way that's perfectly fine on Shabbos, because just for the day. We don't permanently tie them as part of making them, right? So there's no problems here, Shemi Yitzhar, and it's not a tircha to put your shoelaces back. But if the string comes out of your sweatpants, then then those are things which a lot of people normally tie to keep from slipping in. I mean, it might depend. There might be different kinds of sweatpants, etc. But in a lot of sweatpants, bathing suits, even hoodies, right? That's what you call the sweat, right? The string comes out of here, and then usually you tie it so it won't slip in. And that's a permanent knot, right? Which is a chashav and isur d'oraisa. I'm not promising you whether or not it's an isur d'oraisa to tie that knot, because it's not a Boy Scout knot. But it's certainly, according to many quotes, an isur d'oraisa to tie those knots. And therefore, if the string comes out of your sweatshirt or your sweatpants, you should not put it back on Shabbos, because gzeirah shemi yikshur. But if it comes out of your shoes, then you should.
What if someone's very lazy about tying their shoes and they tie it once in a while and they just slip it out and out? Usually?
People do it with regular tying shoes.
I still think that they probably don't leave it for so long there would be a chash when it's a d'oraisa of kosher, and B, they don't really make such a strong knot, so I think it would still be okay. Even if sometimes people do tie their shoes for a long time, they probably still do it in a way that it's not a d'oraisa kesher. That it's not so strong, it's not for so long. They still know once in a while, but, you know, that's what I caught nearly.
What about a shoe that is a slip-on shoe, but has the lace? When you tie it, you try to tie it for as long as
then maybe it would be a problem if the laces fell out to put them back in, because you might tie them. I mean, even if the laces don't fall out, it would be a problem to tie them, right? So, okay, then you'd have to be nizer. And if it's a tircha, even, let's say, shoelaces, which you never tie permanently, let's say normal shoelaces, regular shoelaces, right?
That part, like, there are people that are, like, very good at, like, weaving out that thing out of that hoodie or other stuff.
Yes, but even if it's not a tircha, it's a problem because it's dark elixir. You're supposed to make a knot in it so it doesn't slip in. Although it might depend.
Louis
Tzu, you had a hoodie.
If it was supposed to be there, they would have sold it like that. People do it because they're
not. Okay, so look, if you have a kind of hoodie which it's not normal to make a knot there, let's say it has such a wide hole that even with a knot it would slip in, so it wouldn't make a difference, and it's you could do it easily without a tircha, then it would be mutter to put it in if it fell out. I'm not making a halacha moshmi sinai that make a low plug. I'm just saying in most cases, I can imagine shoes are okay to put it back, and sweatshirts or sweatpants are not okay, but it depends on the case. If you have a case which is not the derech to tie, let's say if sweatpants where there's just no place, tying wouldn't help anyway, right? Meaning there's not shy to like make permanent knots in it, and it was easy to thread it back through, then it would be mutter.
Is there a difference in the type of laces? Like some shoes have leather laces, I used to have all the time for us. If you play catch on Shabbos, your baseball gloves, sometimes there's knots on those baseball gloves, undone.
So if the knots in the baseball glove...
And they suddenly come out.
So first of all, it's for sure usher to retie them on Shabbos. That's a permanent knot. And if let's say the leather falls out, there would be usher to put it back. Let's say one of the piece of leather that tied it falls out. It would be usher to put it back in, because you might tie it in a chanami. That's probably an esoterisa of kosher to tie those baseball gloves. You're tying them strong forever. Again, without getting into machlokas, whether something about a Boy Scout knot is doraisa, let's assume we're choshish that any strong knot that lasts a long time is.
I just want to clarify, what makes something permanent? The fact that how long you want it to last?
Okay. L'chora mi d'oraisa, a knot is only usur if you intend for it to last for a long time and it's a strong knot that would naturally last a long time. Both. Okay, that's the whole machlokas we're showing in the first set of Shin Yud Zayin. Ayin Shom Ve'in Kamokom Baharich, but Midravanim were machmir if you intend it to last a long time, even if it's a weak knot, it's usur. And if it's a strong knot, even if you intend it to last a short time, it's usur. That's what we're machmir in Midravanim. That's why, you can't double knot your shoes. I don't know how many people double knot their shoes anyway, because it's a pain to take off. But you can't double knot your shoes on Shabbos, because even though you're only doing it for one day, it's a strong knot that could last forever. And likewise, you can't single knot and bow your shoes on Shabbos if you intend to leave it that way for many days, because even though it's a weak knot, you're planning to leave it for a long time. Okay, but that's...
Are we getting into ties also?
No, because we're not learning Lach of Kosher now, but maybe in Summerstein we will, if the people want to have Hilchot Shabbos Summerstein. They'll have to learn in Kosher. Okay, but Lamaisa, I think ties are both. If you are only doing it for a short time, meaning if you tie your tie every day, but I think it's perfectly much on Shabbos. If you're the kind of person who ties their tie and then like slips it out like this and only reties it once in a blue moon, then it'll be usher to retie on Shabbos because then you're tying for a long time.
But it might be a chatzitza.
Okay, we're not getting into the chassidish parts. That's why I always keep my tie very loose, because I'm the ikra litvak, but I want to be choshesh for the chassidim. Okay. Now, the Ramah says something different. Ramah, in the name of Tosos and the Rush, says something different. He says, only one isser. What's the one isser? If it's a tircha, then aser gzeira shema yikshar. Right? He says it's only one. If it's a tircha, it's aser gzeira shema yikshar. And everyone wonders, like, man and shmita itzvah I've seen. If the gzeira shema yikshar, that just depends if you're likely to tire or not. What difference does it make if it's a tircha or not? And that's before, it's not what the Tosfos and Rosh said. So everyone said that Rama just made a terrible mistake. The Rama must have not been feeling well that day, and he made a terrible mistake. The Bir Halacha comes to the half-rescue of the Rama. He doesn't rescue his psach, but he rescues his reputation, and says, no, the Rama must have been based on the Hagos Mordechai, I think that's who it was, says the Bir Halacha, the Rama is really b'shem Hagos Mordechai. The Hagos Mordechai had a special shita, which was that only if there's a tircha where it goes there, you might do a kesher. Why? He says when people do a tircha, they're going to finish the job and they're going to do more things. When people do something easy, then they're usually just going to do it in zehu. Once you're getting into it, you might do more. And he says he thinks that's why if you're mahadek, it might lead to tkia. He says psychologically, when someone really gets into a serious job, then it'll be hard to stop themselves. You know, if you just do the thing for 3 seconds, you'll remember what you're doing, what you're not. Once you get into it, you want to finish the job. So psychologically, it's only Xeri you might forget Shabbos and do a kesher if you're really into a hard job. Okay, and he says, even though it's not what Tosfos and Rosh say, that's what the Hagos Mordechai says. And maybe they're about to sign the pass like the Hagos Mordechai. He's allowed to. We don't agree, but he's allowed to. It says before Shazarama, Tosfos and the Rosh. The Bir Halacha points out something very important, which is that the Rama didn't write the parentheses in the Rama. The printers wrote the parentheses in the Rama. And they sometimes get made mistakes. There are many cases in the Shulchan Aruch where they actually made mistakes and they just didn't understand the Rama properly, and I guess whoever the printers were who added, I don't mean a printer was a total Amaris, then how would he have done anything? I mean, the printer hired a guy who was a bit of a Yodea Sefer, who knew how to read on a basic level of a Ben Yeshiva, to put parentheses in the Rama. But the guy wasn't Lamden and didn't really understand the Umkan Shel Devarim, and sometimes got it wrong. Meaning he never wrote something random, it always had more or less to do with it. But sometimes he misunderstood the chak of the Ramah, and he put the wrong bakar. So the Mishmur says maybe the guy, whoever the printer hired, his nephew who learned in Yeshiva to put the parentheses in the Ramah, maybe got it wrong. And really the Ramah was based on Gos Mordechai, so therefore the Ramah wasn't Chas V'Shalom stupid. Right? The Ramah maybe just passed like a different Rishon. But nonetheless, either way, we don't pass like the Ramah. You know, even though he rescued him, we don't pass like the Ramah. We pass there's two separate Yisurim. You're not allowed to restring something if it's a Tercha, regardless of tying, and you're not allowed to put a string back in that you might tie regardless of Tercha. However, all of this, we're not really sure if it has anything to do with Makom HaPatish, but if you go back to the Gemara, and Daf Mem Ches, about the stuffing in the pillow, if you look at what does the Gemara say, Rav Chista Shori Laduri Urdud Meisad Yim Shabta. Rav Chista permitted returning the stuffing to the pillow on Shabbos. Eifei Rav Hanan Bar Chista L'Rav Chista, Matir Ve'et Cetera, Et Cetera. Ve'ein Noses HaMochem Lo Tom Chom Lo Yes, so you're not going to put stuffing into the pillow or mattress on Shabbos. Lokash Rebechad Yom Atiki. It depends if it's old or new. What does that mean? If it came out and it's old and you're putting back, that's not Makom HaPatish, because it was already finished being manufactured. But if you're putting it in for the first time, that's usher, because that's like finishing the manufacture. Right? So, therefore, quotes the Mishnah Brura as a Dover Muskum here. He says, Yudches V'davka Osan HaRitzuos, HaRitzuos Chadasha Usher. To make Rebbe Takin Mana. You're only allowed to put in what was already there. That's just maintenance. But to put in new laces, that's usher. That is like, says the Mishnah Berurah, Dimikri Mitakin Mana. That's Makom HaPatish, that's fixing. So this whole thing of returning laces, whether it's your sweatshirt or your sweatpants or your shoes or whatever else it may be, right? What if you have a girl, little girl with a dress and has a little belt on it, a sash?
B'nai Akiva shirt.
In a B'nai Akiva shirt, you know, you have to like lace it up like this. There's a word for tilboshet. In your tilboshet, you have to like lace it up with like a shoelace kind of thing. So if it fell out, you can put it back in the tilboshet of B'nai Akiva, you can put it back in. Because it's not a tercha, and I don't think you normally tie it with a permanent knot, but I don't know. I've never been vacuum. What?
You don't tie it with
a Okay, you don't tie it with a claw with a permanent or temporary knot, right? But that's only to put in the same ones. But let's say you get new tilboshets, and now you have to put in the strings, or you get new shoes and you have to put in the laces. I know a lot of our shoes come with laces. But let's say you have shoes that come without laces, you have to put in new laces. Then that's usher and Shabbos because of a chash makom HaPatish. Now what if, something that's not 100% clear from the Gemara, what if it's an old pillow but new stuffing? Or old shoes but new laces? Meaning the shoes were already finished with laces. Then the laces ripped. Now you want to put in new laces. Or this actually happened to my kids go to, not the Bnei Akiva, but are very involved in a similar youth group called Ariel. And they have a similar tilboshet which is exactly the same. Except that the little patch in exactly the same shape and exactly the same place in the shirt says the logo of Ariel instead of the logo of Bnei Akiva. Meaning you have to look hard to tell the difference. And for some special thing called Chodesh Ergun, is a special month they have in Cheshvan because there's nothing else special in Cheshvan. So they have to do something special. So Cheshvan is a special month of youth groups in Israel to like fill in. So it's, every month gets something. So they got new tzruchim, new laces, special new colored laces for their tilboshet. So they realize it's Shabbos afternoon. They ask, can we give them out on Shabbos? Then everyone will take out their old lace and put in the new lace for fancy, for Ptichat, Chodesh, or Gun, etc. So this is Halach L'Maaseh in my house this year. And I said, if you look in the Mishmur Yudchet, he says, "Davka otan ritzuot, abo ritzuot chadashes lo haisa shamitchila aser demikri metakin mana." You can only put back the same ones that came out. You can't put in new ones. If you put in new ones, that's like making a new combination. That's a chashah makom HaPatish. Not everyone agrees with this Mishnah Berurah. the Ktzos HaShulchan, which is Rav Chaim Naya, who's famous for arguing with the Chazon Ish about how big a Kveitza is. Anyway, the Ktzos HaShulchan says that no, as long as it's the shoe was had laces once, you can even put in new laces. As long as the shirt had a string once, you can even put in a new shirt. As long as the shirt and the shoe is old, the laces can be new. But that's not the Psak of the Mishmur. What does it say from the Ish Matzliach there? What does he makriya? He talks about this. You should. What does Ravadu say in this?
And then you can put in a different color shoelace, because then it'll be gouty.
Okay, that's a different answer. That's a smaller answer. Okay, so there is a daya of the Ktzos HaShulchan. Everyone should look once at the Ktzos HaShulchan in the base matter. If you have it, it's like the top of section 9, maybe, like the first 9.1 Efsher. Again, Rav Chaim Naya, he was the biggest Chabad posek in Eretz Yisrael, at the time of Medinat Yisrael, etc. He was famous for arguing with the Chazon Ish, a kibetza always meant an egg. The Chazon Ish moved to Eretz Yisrael and said a kibetza meant two eggs, and the people who lived in the Yeshiva Yashaniks, the Haredisniks, we call them nowadays, who were here from like a long time beforehand, were very upset that someone came from Europe and was making all kinds of new halachas that weren't the tradition. But almost everyone listened to Chazon Ish just because he was the Chazon Ish, and his intellect towered over the universe. But Rav Avraham Chaim Naya came out and wrote a whole book disproving the Chazon Ish. I mean, then the Sefer wrote a book after disproving it, and Ad Hegel was there. Every few years someone writes a book disproving the other, and the wheel hasn't stopped rolling yet. That's what he's famous for, that if you look at anything, it says, a Revi Ashir Chazon Ish and a Revi Ashir Rav Chaim Naya. His name was Avraham Chaim Naya, but he went more by Chaim, same person, Rav Avraham Chaim Naya and Rav Chaim Naya. So if you ever see anything says, how much matzah do you have to eat? This is matzah Shir Chazon Ish, matzah Shir, how much wine do you have to drink? Shir Chazon Ish, Shir Avraham Chaim, Rav Chaim Naya. Rav Chaim Naya was the author of Ktzos HaShulchan, as well as Shiurei Torah and Shiurei Mikvah, or something, two books about how big a kibbutz is. Not just a kibbutz, a loan, get us on, everything else, etc. And even a kazayis a little, they argued. So, but his main sefer, that's what he's in history, he's famous for arguing with Chazon Ish about Shiurim. And he was an Eretz Yisrael, the posek in the time of the Chazon Ish, who was a Chabadnik. He always passed the base of an Hagei Chabad. A lot of Chabadniks follow all his psakim. But his main work was Ktzos HaShulchan, an in-depth 9 volumes originally, then they condensed it, work on Hilchos Shabbos, the Iman. And so he takes on this Mishavura, and he says, you can put new laces in your old shoe. But that's not the mainstream sock. The mainstream sock is like this Mishnah Berurah. You can only put old laces in the old shoe. Not only that, you can only put old laces in the same shoe they came from. You can't like take two shoes and switch the laces. Then it's new for that shoe. You can only return something the way it was. Which makes sense. If something fell out, you return the way it was. That's like taking thorns out of your clothing. That's not finishing making it. That it was already made. You're just restoring it. But to put new laces in shoes, even if the laces were already in different shoes, and even if the shoe once had different laces, if these laces weren't in these shoes, then it's usher to put them in on Shabbos. If this string was never in this sweatshirt or these sweatpants or this tolboshet, then it is usher to put it on Shabbos because of a chash makeh bepatish, because you're making a new combination of things that didn't exist yet. And even though it's not a chash binyan, because you're not being tokeya, right? You're not attaching them strongly, you're attaching them super loosely. It's very roughly, but nonetheless, a problem of making, if it was already made once, you could put it back. It's roughly, but to put it in the first time is a chash of make bepatish. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says very pithily in Sif Katan Yudches. Let me just give one etza for a second, based on the Mishnah Berurah in Tes Zayin. Mishnah Berurah Tes Zayin quotes Ma'ariv Avraham, quoting Beis Yosef, quoting Tshuvos, that we don't know exactly who wrote them. But if you look at the Mishnah Berurah Tes Zayin, he says, but the same thing, B'minal Chadash, here he says the basic rule. B'minal Chadash also leads to Yom Tzuz Shabbos and feel on a new shoe, you can never put it in new for the first time. That's for sure, it's B'takin Mane. Likewise, in some sort of coat or a frock or pants or whatever, you can't put the belt in. Because you're leaving it permanently, and it's called B'takin Mane. But what about a belt? What about this belt? We all put our belt and our pants on Shabbos, no? Not talking about the one that's attached to the pants that you leave permanently. Like the belt that moves from pants to pants. We all put that in our pants on Shabbos. Why is it a problem with talking about it? We're threading it through for the first time. What if the new belt and new pants? Yeah, whatever said, you can only put a belt on Shabbos. You already had this belt in the pants once last Shabbos. No, everyone knows you can take a brand new belt and brand new pants, put the belt and the pants on Shabbos. Why? Said Mishmur, obvious. Because Eino Mevatali Hosom, you're not leaving it there permanently. It's just temporary. The shash is only things that are supposed to stay indefinitely. Like shoelaces, they stay in the shoe indefinitely. Or a sash in a little girl's dress. It's supposed to stay there indefinitely. Or the belt in the frock or the raincoat. It's supposed to stay there indefinitely. But a belt that you're only supposed to put in your pants for one day, we all know when you get undressed at night, you're going to take the belt off and put it in your closet and take the pants off and put them on the hanger. That's not a shash of anything. That's only temporary. That's for so that's the lashon mevatel. You leave it. Mevatel means to leave it permanently. Therefore, we see when it comes to this, this is only returning old laces to their place. Right? That's this whole discussion of Tircha and Yikshor. New laces are Pashin and Isser. What's the only heter for new laces? New laces are Aser Mishum Makeh B'Patish. What's the only heter? But Mutter, if it's only temporary, meaning Eino Mivatel. Therefore, right, Azar read us at the bottom of this very nice Mishnah Berurah Hilchos Vatzliach, which has all the Sephardi poskim from Rav Avadya. But even if you don't know from Rav Avadya, the Shmir Shabbos Hilchos also has this Einfal. Einfal means like a clever idea. He says, what if your laces break on Shabbos and you have no laces in your shoes? How are you going to walk without laces in your shoes? Some people maybe never have, and then regular, the way regular people walk. Right? How are you going to walk without laces in your shoes? How are you going to get anywhere in Shabbos? You don't have laces in your shoes. What are you supposed to do? So he says, you can't put new laces in your shoes. Because we pass like the Mishnah Berurah against the Ksos HaShulchan, and that's at Makom HaPatish. He says, what can you do? You can put something in your shoe without being mevatelit. How do you do that? He doesn't matter to just put laces in your shoes and I'll take them out after Shabbos and then switch them with something. That's the something someone's normally mevatel, and that would at least be usher b'drabanan. But if you put something in your shoe that people aren't normally mevatel, like for example, you take like a a string that you usually
dental floss.
Okay, but I don't know how you come to the shop. So pre-cut dental floss. Right? And use it to tie your shoes. Obviously you're not mevatel, because obviously after Shabbos you're going to throw that in the garbage and put in normal shoelaces. You would never want to walk around like that. On Shabbos, after you can walk around like that, even though you look like an idiot, everyone knows it's because you're makban Shmir Shabbos, and so therefore it looks like you look from. But if you show up that way on Sunday, people are going to think that you've lost your mind. Right? So likewise, says the Shmir Shabbos, or Avadya, if you put the wrong color shoelaces. Now again, sometimes that's cool for little kids, right? Put like neon green shoelaces in exactly the clashing color sneakers or something. But I'm talking about adults, people like us. Right? If I put neon green shoelaces in these shoes and went to shul on Shabbos,
awesome.
It would be, my kids would be very impressed. But nonetheless, but I wouldn't. It's obvious that I'm not going to leave it that way, because it's not shayich. It's obvious I can't leave it that way. It's obvious I have to switch it as soon as possible. And therefore, if you're stuck b'shas hadchak and you're an adult, or just a not cool kid.
Color laces are very in for dress shoes nowadays.
They are.
Back to fat.
Again, it depends which circles you travel in, perhaps. I'm not sure if they're in for rabbis. Although, I guess it depends what style.
On the Zusha cover they have.
What?
On the Zusha cover they have.
Not
holding
Zusha.
Use famous Chassidish stories. That's Zusha.
No.
Okay. Whatever. Okay. Anyway, I'm not holding Lemaisa. I don't. If you're a rabbi rock star, maybe. But I'm saying like a rabbi, like me. And you can decide if you're like that or not. Then for me, it's mutter to put green neon laces in my shoes on Shabbos, because obviously I'm not mevatel them there. Even white laces. I'm allowed to put white laces, white sneaker, Converse, white laces, I can put in my Shabbos shoes, because obviously I'm not mevatel them there. I have no having mevatel them, so it's okay. So if you're stuck, you can't take laces out of one shoe, put in another shoe, or take new laces and put them in an old shoe that were machmer on, like the Mishnah Berurah, but you can't put something that you're not mevatel, and that would be an eitzah if you were stuck, or whatever. Let's say your belt in your raincoat ripped, and you ordered a new one, right? And you didn't put it in. So you can't put it on Shabbos, you're mevatel it. What you can do is, you can take the belt from a different raincoat that doesn't match and put it in, and then you're not mevatel it. What? Okay, whatever it may be. My turn. Okay, you get the point. Now, excuse me. Now, let's go on to a much more difficult sif, challenging sif, Gimel. Says, Matirin Beis Hatzaver Mikesher Shekashru Kovitz. It's also, it's starting with Kshira. Notice that it started with Kshira. But we also threw in, it's good, we get to learn a little Kshira, Agaf, and a little Tefira, we'll see. Also threw in some Matapatish. Matirin Beis Hatzaver Tzaver Mikesher Shekashru Kovitz. You're allowed to untie the neck of a garment from the tie that the launderer made in it, because that's not a permanent tie. What does that mean? The launderer sometimes in those days would tie the neck of the poncho or the shirt closed in order to be able to launder it better. But that's a temporary knot. It's only while he's doing the laundry. So therefore, you're allowed to untie it on Shabbos. Fine. I will aim poskno so echadash and hakamanu. But you can't open a neck slit, a neck hole in a garment in the first place, because that is tikkun manes. So if you have, remember in their days, a lot of very posh clothing was just like a posh piece of cloth. And then how would you make the neck? You would just cut a hole, right? And how do we know, now, can't prove this by Chazal, how do we know in biblical times that the neck holes of their clothing didn't have like we have, right? We have like a hem and it's like folded over and sewn nicely to be very strong, right? We know in old days they didn't have that. How do you know in old days that the neck was just a cut hole? It wasn't like we have nowadays, like if you ever see like a shirt, like a t-shirt, right? It's always like folded over and sewn nice to be a nice strong end. There was just a cut in the fabric. From the Chumash, right? When it says to make a me'ilah for the Kohen Gadol, it says you should make it like they manufacture armor for soldiers, where you should like fold down where the neck is and sew it so that it won't tear, so it'll be very strong. Haraya, that's civilian clothing. You just cut a hole. Okay, so if you just cut a hole in the neck, and sometimes they wouldn't even cut a hole in the neck, they would just cut a slit, right? And then you would put it down and, you know, and it would be a neck. So if you open that the first place on Shabbos, then that's an Isser Metakin Mana. It's not so clear in the Rishonim why that's not an Isser of Korea. You're ripping fabric, right? Why do you say Metakin Mana? Why is it an Isser of Korea? As a matter of fact, Shana the Rambam is that it is an Isser of Korea, because you're ripping the fabric. But the Magen Avraham says that the Mechaber, based on Rashi, seems to think that it's a big machlokas, that there's no, it's a big machlokas Rishonim. Is there an Isser d'Oraisa of Korea? If it's not, Almanat, or at least Almanat Litvor. Right? If you're not going to resew it. Right? So, it seems to be the Mechaber, at least, seems to be paskening that it's not Korea, maybe it's not Korea because you're not going to resew it, perhaps. But it's a Chash Metakin Mane. So here we see, if we remember, we saw in Simon Shin Beis that taking extra things out that are unnecessary is Makim Patish. Here we see that poking holes in things, which is the final act of manufacturing, is also a chash of Makim Patish. Okay, so far, not necessarily so relevant to our everyday life, because we usually buy things, they already have all the parts cut that need to be cut, they already have all the holes poked in them that need to be poked in them. But, he continues, says the Ramah, I feel for niftach, even if the neck was already opened. Just the tailor tied or sewed it together like the tailors do, meaning as opposed to the launderers do. The launderers, they just make a knot like the launderers make. That's not a problem to reopen on Shabbos. But when the umnin, when the tailors close it up, that's a very serious closing up. And therefore, that's an isser of metakin mana to reopen it on Shabbos. Explains the excuse me, sorry. So here we see that, again, this has to do with manufacturing. If the, like, if something is open and then it gets closed again and you reopen it, is that considered just like taking thorns out of your clothing, like just routine maintenance? Or is that considered like finishing the manufacturing? So says the Mishnah, says the Ramah, it depends how it got closed up. If the launderer tied it up to launder it, then untying it is perfectly fine. It's not kosher because it's a temporary shira. And it's not metakin man, it's not makan of patish, because it wasn't done in the way of like part of the manufacturing process. But if the tailors, who are the ones who manufacture clothing, or actually like fix rips or whatever they do, like they really make the clothing, if the tailors tie it up or sew it up strongly in the way that the tailors do, then to open it again is like opening from scratch. That's considered already manufacturing, because once the tailors close it up, that is as if it's remanufactured, and now it's usher to remanufacture it, says the Mishnah Brura, quoting the in Sifkatan Chaf Gimel, quoting the Yamshel Shlomo. I think he's quoting the Magen Avraham, quoting the Yamshel Shlomo, if I'm not mistaken. But either way, he's quoting the Yamshel Shlomo, which is the Maharshal. He says, he says, what if you just, apparently in those days, the way they would put on some of their ketonet, their tunics or shirts really, is it would have a wide hole. Like they would put it on and it would have a very wide hole to get over their head easily. But then the shoulders would be open. So they would have to like tie the shoulders closed to like make it sneeze when they wore it, and they would tie the shoulders closed during the day. When they want to get over their head at night, they would untie the shoulders. Okay, so he says, what if it literally lehistabich? What if it all got knotted and tangled, and you can't untie it? You mess up. You somehow tangled the knots in your shirt to the point where you can't untie it anymore. And you can't get it off. Are you allowed to rip it? Says the Yamshel Shlomo, yes. You're allowed to rip that. After all, it's not a kesher shel kayama. It is no problem to rip. And says the Mishnah Brura, what's the difference between that and the case of the Ramah? He says it all has to do with the manufacturing process. In the case of the Yamshel Shlomo, you accidentally tangled it. That's not part of the manufacturing process. And therefore, even if you closed up the hole, you're allowed to reopen the hole. That's not makan v'patish. Just like if the launderer ties it, the laundryman, the cleaning guy ties it, you're allowed to untie it. However, in the Ramah's case, it was the umnin. The tailors sewed it up, either when they were making it, or maybe it ripped and you had to send it for repair, but that's also like making a new clothing. When the tailors sew it up and the derech of the umnin, then ripping it is considered part of the manufacturing process and is makan v'patish. When it gets tangled by accident, or or it's tied by the laundry guy, then that's not done as part of or the way it's done in the manufacturing process, and therefore ripping it is no problem. But he throws in one funny one funny halach at the end here. He says, where was I? I was in Chaf Gimel after the brackets. V'me'eino rugel lahatar kesher laksonis el mishabbos l'shabbos. But what if you tie your undershirt on, this ketonet, only once a week? You only tie and untie it once a week. So you're tying it for a whole week, right? Okay, in our days, like, we shower more often. Remember, in their days, they showered for Shabbos, right? So you tie it for a whole week till you're ready to shower for the next Shabbos. So what if you tie in the ketonet was some sort of undershirt? It wasn't exactly like our undershirts, but it was some sort of like closest to the body garment. So if you tie it for a whole week, then he says, "Asur l'nati k'moda asur lehatir." He says then, just like you're not allowed to untie it because something tied for a week is considered to be chashashim, a permanent, at least with your abundant, a permanent knot. You're not allowed to untie it. You're likewise not allowed to rip it open. Okay, this is a perplexing psak of the Yamshel Shlomo. It probably has nothing to do with Makan v'Patish. That's the way most Chronim assume, but he says that if you tie something for a week, you're not allowed to untie it. Okay, that much I can handle. Says you're also not allowed to rip it open. Why aren't you allowed to rip it open? It doesn't seem to be makom patish to rip it open. After all, it wasn't like part of the manufacturing process, just you put it on for a week at a time. So most of the Chronim understand that no, he means it's considered matir. It's a halacha of matir to rip open something tied, even if you don't untie the knot. That's a big chiddush that comes out of this. This is the biggest chiddush, not the most important halacha, the biggest chiddush in this siman, this yamshel. Shlomo seems to say something really, really mechudish, that if something's tied and you're too lazy to untie it, or it's too hard to untie it, so you just like rip the whole string, that's a halacha of matir, of untying. And therefore, if it's tied temporarily, it's okay. But if it was tied permanently, it's not okay. That is a big chumrah. This Yom Shel Shlomo, it is a little little hard to understand. Big chumrah, it's a little hard to understand. But some posts can quote it. Even though it's a little hard to understand why it should be, like if I tie a box on the top, I'm not allowed to cut the string on the bottom, that's considered untying, and they're not still there. So it's a big chiddush. I tend to think maybe he only meant if you rip it in a place where then the knot's going to come out. Or you rip it in a place that destroys the knot also. Not if you like rip it all the way on the other side. Maybe in his shirt, it's like there was just the knot, and if you ripped it, you know, the knot would come out. And that's why he thinks of Shasha Matir. Okay, let's leave that for now. What we've learned so far, still have to get to the end of this, Rabbah. What we've learned so far is that if something gets sewn up or tied up and you have to remake the hole, if it happened by accident or it happened just as part of the laundry process, that's okay because it's just routine maintenance. But if the tailor who was really working in a manufacturing way sewed it up in a professional way or tied it up in a professional way, then that is considered to be makom patish to open it. To open it again. Now the end of this Ramah is very halacha l'maisa, says the Ramah. And again, this is not so much makom patish, but still very nogei l'maisa. Says l'chein asher l'natik o lachtok zug shamar alam atfurim yachad. We don't have this nowadays. You ever buy shoes that were sewn together? Yeah?
They're connected. They're not sewn with like a thread.
Sometimes they have that plastic thing. Yeah, but sometimes socks are actually sewn together.
Yeah.
Right, even just with the one double stitch. So there are things that are sewn together. In the old days, like when they made the shoes, the guy would sew the shoes together just to keep them together until he sold them. So he says you're not allowed to cut or break the pair of shoes that are sewn together, like the umnim sew them. Avgav the tefira in shel kayama, even though it's only temporary sewing, the ein chilek betefira bein shel kayama le'eino shel kayama. There's no difference in sewing, whether it's shel kayama or it is eino shel kayama, right? Makes no difference. Sewing is what? No, this is the Ramah. Continuing the Ramah in Shinyan Zayin Gimel. Says the Ramah, first opinion, when it comes to kosher and matir, there's a heter of temporary and this or permanent. Different in kayama and eino shel kayama. When it comes to sewing, there's no difference whether it's shel kayama or eino shel kayama. However, at the Ramah, some people are matir ripping temporary tfira. Some people say just like in kosher, there's a heter of temporariness. In tfira, there's a heter of temporariness. And you shouldn't matter this in front of the Am Ha'aretz because he might not appreciate the distinction between temporary and permanent. But it sounds like, and the Achronimus understand from Askanah the Ramah, when he ends with, Ein Lahatir Vnei Am Ha'aretz. What does it sound like? It sounds like Ein Lahatir Vnei Am Ha'aretz, but Yesh Lahatir, Shalob Vnei Ha'aretz, like we really hold like the Mekilim here. This is an important psak. Again, it's a tangent from where we started. I agree. This is an important psak that the Ramah seems to be Mako, that temporary kosher and matir is mutter, temporary tofer and korea is mutter, just like temporary kosher and and matir. Okay, how this applies to a lot of our modern day situations, maybe we will have to come back to on Tuesday, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, so we'll have to come back to applying this, but this will have to do with A, things that have nothing to do with Makom HaPatish, with what we're talking about, etc. Like, how about post-it notes and post-it flags, right? Stark marks, are they still calling that?
Yeah.
And band-aids and diapers that are all temporary sticking and unsticking. I mean, the sewing we don't have as much nowadays, and the exact case that I'm on. What if you get a pair of shoes that are stuck together, or a pair of socks that are not only stuck together, they're actually sewn together with stitches, right? And what if you have the labels on your sleeve or your suit that are sewn on, etc., etc., right? What the halacha of all those things? What about the things the cleaners staple onto your clothing? Right? All those things we'll come back to Amir Tzachem on Tuesday. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.